Excuse me, I'm sorry.
We're going to do Reloaded sometime in the future, so
thank you.
I'm sorry, that. I'm coming down with something.
Which actually we should actually though, thank you, Ron, for reminding me that
we should mention
that this although came small. Out about a month and a half after the Matrix did.
When did Matrix come out?
March.
Did it?
End of March of 99.
Mm-hmm.
And the general consensus was, I mean, you know, compared to the Matrix, you know, part of the reason people didn't respond to this one as they did the original is, you know, it seemed a bit old-fashioned. Yeah. And, like, you know, it's kind of the old,
you know,
old,
I mean,
guard, whereas the Matrix was, yeah, you know, the state of the art.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. You know, I mean, and that's not only throughout, you know, I mean, that's like throughout the entire, you know, the dialogue and all
yeah,
that stuff, you know. And
well,
I mean, well, God. Sorry. No, okay, the overall style.
I'm not saying
excuse
it.
Me.
The I'm overall, not saying it.
The overall style. I don't want to specifically reference anything. But I mean, when you compare, I mean, a lot of people don't like the first Matrix, but I mean, when you have to sit the two movies together, you know, I mean, the first Matrix had everything in comparison to this movie.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
it wasn't Star Wars. You know, it wasn't Star Wars.
No.
But, you know, I mean, they even, I mean, new visual effects groundbreaking is happening here. You know, but we never quite see it.
But
much
more
as,
in terms of quantity,
right,
as opposed to quality. Which,
oh yeah,
was part of the reason the Matrix actually beat Episode One in a lot of the major technical categories.
In the Oscars,
you know, best sound editing, and
mm-hmm,
best visual effects,
mm-hmm,
and that also won best film editing. But and I really felt like this movie was robbed of at least visual effects and sound editing, but I do like the way Ahmad talks when that happens. And this is a good little moment here, although it reminded me so much of a scene in E.T., you know, when they're trying to get the device, when the device that E.T. builds finally works. Because,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, Elliot says the exact same thing.
Mm.
But, I think now would be a good time, since we passed over the scene where they talk about it, the idea of Anakin being conceived by the midi-chlorians,
mm-hmm,
and obviously Christian
biblical reference. Yeah, I mean,
right,
reference. I mean, it's you really, it's really hard not to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd have to be like completely oblivious to any sort of religious,
right, you know,
belief,
you
ideas.
Know, and I mean,
to not see it.
One of my things is that so much of these fantasy sci-fi movies have some type of biblical references, some type of something, you know, be spiritual references.
Like, well, The Matrix.
Yeah, you know, or,
yeah,
you know, specifically Christian spiritual references, you know, but behind them, I mean, so many. I read a lot of fantasy books, you know. I mean, that's so it's almost the entire Bible, but in a different form,
mm-hmm,
you know. And so I don't have a problem with those things happen.
No, neither do I.
I mean, some people do. I agree. I mean, I don't have a problem when people do that either,
right,
but I do have a problem when it doesn't come naturally out of the story,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which is, and they try too hard to do it, which is something that I felt was wrong with The Matrix, and which is something that I felt was wrong here, and why it kind of, you know, sort of elicits laughs,
mm-hmm,
you know, the idea that, you know, okay, he's, you know, this is the obvious one. It's like, I think he's set up a bit too hard But this guy was this kid was special.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
you know,
I mean, most of the novels that I read that have something like that in it, I mean, there's like legends and you know, there's a whole sort of backstory to like a chosen one type thing. And so,
yeah.
For me, it worked better in The Matrix than this works here. You know, this kid, the chosen one.
I could see that, especially given how it plays out.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think he was just really trying too hard,
right.
Stretching with this.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, I really don't have a whole lot of problems.
For more of this debate, check our Matrix commentary.
Sit back. I'm done talking about the Matrix until further notice.
I'm betting everything on Sepulba.
Okay.
Get the hot girl thing. So.
Yeah.
I guess hot supposed to be hot blue things.
Tentacles.
Split. You like your girls like that?
Dave, sorry. I
sorry.
I'm speechless. Quite frankly.
We're good.
Well.
Our taste in women has always differed.
Chance Cube.
I like the Chance Cube.
It's just, there seems to be so many, you know, okay, we'll make a bet here, we'll make a bet there. This whole betting.
I like thing. That.
I mean, it just seemed kind of hacked together for me. It just didn't seem to quite flow. You know?
Yeah,
I like the concept that, you know,
now we're betting on this, now we're betting on this to get this. I mean, just like, it seems a little overused and seems a little hacked together to me, you know.
In my opinion, I thought that was one of the stronger points of the story is that, you know, so much of Tatooine at this point in the, you know, in this period of the saga, you know, is in fact, you know, ran by gambling, you know. I actually thought that was a pretty strong story point.
No, you know, and I'm down with that. And, you know, like, the first time it happened, that was cool. But, mm-hmm. I mean, wasn't that, like, time number, like, three?
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, the third bet they make together. It's like,
no, that was actually the second bet. The third bet is...
actually, if you think about it, I mean, it's all connected to the same bet.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's like baying somebody about something and then raising the stakes.
Right. But it just wasn't quite played out that way. I'm not really complaining about how much it happened, really. It's
yeah.
It's just the way it plays out doesn't quite flow smoothly for me.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to know Dave's stance on gambling, he is for it. here we come to what is unquestionably, I think, the highlight of the movie.
Yeah, one of the highlights. The movie has a couple
small,
bright areas. But this, the idea right there of those commentators, like a two-headed something or other, like talking.
One talking in huddies, one talking in... human, whatever you want.
Right.
And
these are some pretty interesting.
The English commentator is
Greg Proops.
Voiced by Greg Proops, who.
But Greg. How do you pronounce. Is it Greg Props or Proops?
I think.
Yeah.
Who's God, I can't remember. I've seen so much on
Whose Line Is It Anyway
that mm-hmm. I should know, but.
And this is some of the first extended. Material that you see, from the as opposed to what you saw in the theater.
Right.
George just can't get enough of his adding material to films.
He can,
but here
there's less of it in episode two. But.
Yeah, here I do think there are some pretty good additions to this.
Right,
you know, it's some fun stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing excellent character designs right here.
Oh yeah,
excellent character designs.
Yeah. Can I just say yuck yuck? Okay.
Glorious. Glorious John Williams music.
Yeah. Oh, the music.
Oh my God. I mean,
this
is vintage.
This section is
John Williams.
And we have our first.
What in the
actually our second.
Second, yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Yes. First. When he
stepped in the.
I'm talking about. I'm not talking about necessarily bathroom humor, but I'm talking about like the first ever fart joke ever in a.
Well, the first audible one, yes. But the second, in all actuality,
yeah. I thought it was fairly bold, the idea that, you know, the concept of slavery was used here. I thought that was fairly bold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It made it that much more involving, I thought.
Yeah.
The idea that Anakin and his mother are slaves, mm-hmm. are in fact slaves. I thought that made
it. The fact that only one of them can be freed.
Mm-hmm. It made it that much more involving, I thought.
No. That idea worked very well.
Yes, it does. First time you ever hear the line, just a moment ago. And one of my favorite uses of the Force theme right there.
Yeah, there are a lot of great uses of the Force theme.
It is,
theme.
You know, it doesn't feel recycled. Any
Jabba
time.
The Hutt and
his
bitch. and his Return of the Jedi glory, as opposed to the
right.
Really not.
Well, you know what? Let's wait.
Well designed. CG character he was in episode 4,
mm-hmm.
for the special edition.
Personally, I like the use of. But I do agree. I think he's a little bit more definitively designed.
Yeah.
For this particular movie.
Yeah.
I'm not as much against the use of him in episode 4 as.
I'm not against the use of him. I'm against the look of him.
Right. No, he does look a lot more like he does.
I like the fact that he appears in episode 4,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't like the way they designed him.
No, I agree with you on that.
He doesn't have that look you remember from Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Here he does.
He does. I agree with you on that.
Which, you know, they need to fix before they put the ultra super sequel double
god
ultimate edition of the. Trilogy out.
I'm a fair Jar Jar lines right there.
Young Greedo.
No, that's not Young Greedo. That's I know. Yeah, well, you should know.
I know it's not Young Ward Davis.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was Willow, obviously, and Wicket,
mm-hmm.
in Jedi.
Yeah.
Ward Davis plays another character here. I can't remember which one. I thought he played second one, too. Or I thought I remembered hearing him play second one. I can't remember.
Well, no, he plays Anakin's buddy, whatever the hell his name is. And then the young Greedo-like... Greedo makes an appearance in a deleted scene.
Oh yeah, I think I remember that. I haven't watched the deleted scenes for this in a while.
But that was supposedly one of the few looks at Anakin's quote unquote dark side.
Yeah.
Is the deleted scene with Greedo, you know, young Greedo. It's kind of interesting to look at and watch, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like the other I can't remember the name of the alien race. The Greedo comes from, but Anakin.
I love this sequence.
Yeah,
this is one of my favorite action sequences from a Star Wars movie.
The video game's actually not too bad either.
LucasArts, don't they do some pretty decent video games?
Yeah. LucasArts does absolutely brilliant video games, and if nobody's played Monkey Island yet, then you have to play that game. That game is fantastic.
I mean, there are some pretty good Star Wars games out on the market, I think, aren't there?
Yeah, but it's almost as if they're non-Star Wars games is the real treat. Mm-hmm. They've done some incredible games that are famous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty hilarious.
I like that too. I do find that pretty cool.
The Tusken Raiders.
Oh yeah, the cutback to the that's pretty hysterical.
I don't know why, in God's name, I'm thinking about this Star Wars commentary, but in movie theaters, we've got a new Coke ad up with the NASCAR racers, and you know they're taking, you know they're not actually racing, but they're racing like remote control cars. It's really funny.
I don't know
how the hell I got on that, but I just saw it today working, and it's really funny. Dang. No.
You know, this job was vicious. This sequence was, you know, I read one piece of criticism that said the sequence was almost too slapstick. But, you know, it's one of those few action sequences, especially in a Star Wars movie, that's funny and exciting at the same time. Yeah. And pretty, you know, I mean...
You know, and it's a long sequence, too. You know? Yeah. So it's good to have a little bit of humor in there.
Plus,
you know,
kind of, I mean...
And the humor, for the most part, the humor does work.
Right.
Yeah. Plus, the thing is, I mean, you've got to remember that, really, I mean, the suspense in this sequence, you have to know that it works out all right.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, if... You know, you really. Where would you go if it didn't work out? I mean, you know. So, you know it works out all right, but it's like you got.
That's a sweet move right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably one of the reasons it does work is because somebody isn't saying too much. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you do. I believe every minute of this.
Yeah.
Of this,
I love this sequence. I mean, yeah. I said before, it's like, there's some sweet stuff here.
Yeah, this is a little bit of action too, right?
Yes,
yeah.
That's kind of messed up.
One of my favorite, one of my favorite lines is coming up. Oh, I don't care what universe you're from. That's kind of hurt.
Yeah.
It's either universe or galaxy. I can't remember. No, this works.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're giving George a hard time for being a little bit too pretentious when it comes to adding and subtracting and multiplying, but,
right.
You know, it does work. You know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you happened to talk about the fact that this is supposed to be some type of chariot race.
Who, me?
Well, it's obviously
I've never seen Ben-Hur.
Well, it's obviously inspired by the chariot race in Ben-Hur.
Yeah, I've never seen Ben-Hur.
I was expecting you to say that. You always used to tell me that.
Did I?
Yeah. I was waiting for it.
Like, I don't care what universe you're from. That's gotta hurt.
What did we talk about re-quoting dialogue wrong? We talked about this.
Yes, we have.
Couldn't quite avoid it on the Back to the Future 3 commentary.
No, we couldn't. We really couldn't avoid it on Back to the Future 1.
No.
But
I really thought we had sort of kicked that habit, but guess not.
No. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to meetings for that.
But I
don't know how we got on that tangent, anyway.
What I like is how he's showing sort of...
What do you like, Dave?
The scale of the race. You know, we see repeat scenery all the time, but we also see new scenery every time he goes through. You know, and we see, you know, kind of new sub-adventures that he goes
through. Well, he really... You know, the thing is, it's like, he really... Lucas really got bad rap for not, you know, giving people sort of the geography of this race.
Right.
But I think you kind of get an idea of it.
Oh, yeah.
You do. You know, I mean, you don't know how elaborate the track is, but...
Right, I mean, but...
You know, I think you get it as well as you need to.
Right, I mean, it's a big track, and they're going really fast. You know? And I mean, he shows you a ton of it, and he shows you enough so that you're familiar with it, you know, through each round.
Yeah.
So I think he did a good enough job as could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have the big danger moment. Because Sebulba broke some stuff earlier. So now you got stuff falling apart. Sweet.
And we get some brilliant percussion ring from Williams coming up.
I mean, the music kicks in the high gear, and it's pretty sweet.
The thing is, this exact same cue was used at another point in the movie, and it works so much better here than it does. What was the other moment in the movie that this cue was used?
R2-D2 is saving the ship.
Right, it is.
I think that's the only other place.
Yeah, it is.
But,
You know, it works in both places, but...
It actually does work pretty well in that earlier sequence.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, I do like it so much better here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, it seems like it was written for this part.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I like in the commentary, I think it was Rick McCallum who mentioned that Ron Howard was looking at this with George Lucas in its early stages, and how he suggested to George that he needed to extend it a little bit, just make it a little bit more suspenseful.
So that was interesting. Yeah, make it like 30 more minutes to your goal. In fact, just make the entire movie one big pod race. Forget all the, you know...
Story? What's that?
Ron...
Those wide shots are spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, seeing like those...
Throwback to Return of the Jedi, the speed bikes.
Right.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay.
Trust me on this one, because that used to be my favorite sequence in Star Wars movie. Still one of them.
What about Hoth?
I don't know, there's something, I don't know. I mean, I remember watching Jedi for the first time in theater. I was like 2
mm-hmm.
when Empire came out, so it's like most of the time
I actually thought this was a pretty funny one right here.
Yeah.
Podu. And yeah,
and this win miraculous,
amazing,
and
I didn't see it coming in the least.
And we go from
completely by surprise.
Good.
Yeah.
And we go from arguably one of the, you know, to this. Mom, I did it.
No, he's got a worse one coming up.
I like the job.
Yeah, I do too.
That was funny.
That was pretty good.
That works.
This is my worst moment after the pod race. What his mother says here is just dreadful. It's like,
well, just the acting in general in this scene is pretty static.
That's one of my worst. That's one of the lines I just despise in this movie. You've given hope to those who have none. I mean, good lord. If that were any less a cliche, any more a cliche, I don't know how it could be.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be a big moment where, you know, the swindler got swindled. I didn't feel it. And it's because, and for me, it's just because, you know, the original multiple betting weirdness, broken weird stuff just didn't flow, you know.
Then why do I like this scene?
That's not a bad scene.
I like this scene,
but not. I don't know if it has the gravity.
Any exchange between these two characters.
But
is...
I don't think it had the gravity that, you know, it was supposed to have. But, no, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, it may not have been intended.
No, if you're looking for gravity, there's not.
Much of this movie.
No. You know what? I like Obi-Wan's story arc in this particular film.
Yeah.
Because he does go from, you know, this hot-headed little, you know, hot, well, not...
Not so much that as second banana.
Yeah.
I mean, he really has nothing to do until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I said you're no longer a slave.
And as incredibly static as the performances are in this scene, Williams' score here is absolutely heartfelt.
This lives above and beyond any. It has any. Yeah,
we forgot about that.
We have hit his worst line for me. We're not even there yet. We're a good 2 or 3 minutes from being there.
Good Lord.
Oh, God.
That's certainly one of the worst readings of the movie.
You all right over there, Dave?
No, I'm fine.
Are you okay?
I'm good.
Dave's still here.
You're with us?
That's the important thing.
Dave's still in the room.
Whew.
Yeah, I can't get. I mean, this is the special edition soundtrack. The second disc opens up with this particular cue to the sequence, and I just I can't get enough of
which
this.
Which is one of my favorite cues.
I can't get enough of this score. Cue.
Actually, my favorite cue of the score is coming up in the final goodbye one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the best uses of the Force theme.
Yeah.
You know, as ridiculous as this may be, it is. This does work.
Yeah, I think it does.
Right.
I think it works in the next scene. It kind of
as close as it comes to being a cliche.
She's the one who's making it happen.
Yeah.
She's the one. Who's
it's kind of working here, but I think it really works in the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is because of the fact that this scene, you know, it's like you have the high of winning and then the fact that he gets to go with the Jedi and then it's like it's sort of an afterthought. Well, what about you? I like how he just turns on 3PO.
It's like walking in your room and turn your radio on and just like...
Of course, I don't think radio is quite as neurotic as 3PO is.
But almost, it works. Yeah, it works in that level.
Yeah, I don't know about the POV shot.
Mm-hmm.
The shot quality looks a little bit worse. I mean, I guess.
That's what I mean.
I mean, the idea of it was good.
Yeah.
But the way it came out just didn't look.
I like C-3PO in that scene, though. I mean,
funny. Too. I just don't necessarily think they had to make it a point of view shot from C-3PO.
Mm-hmm. But
here's my favorite cue of the entire movie.
Well, this entire sequence of him saying goodbye to his mother and like realizing.
Didn't we just hear that line? Like a month and a half ago? 2 months ago?
Who remembers? You know, okay, this is a key moment that you saw over and over again in the trailer, the teaser trailer in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like to touch on right now just what I felt when I saw that trailer. And like this is like right around the time that Dave was introducing me to the concept of downloading trailers and like having it on your, you know. You can watch it as many times as you want, and I ran this trailer into the ground.
If I'm not mistaken, the teaser debuted with Men in Meet Joe Black.
Right.
Mm. Okay.
I remember. No, you know what? No, the trailer. Freddie Prinze Jr. got off of based on a video game.
Wing Commander.
It came out with...
That was one of them, but the original one came out with me, Joe Black.
Dave just cringed over there.
Wing Commander. Classic. Brilliant game. And that, I mean, people wait years for the movie. Because, I mean, the Wing Commander games are essentially movies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematic...
With Mark Hamill.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, starring Mark, coincidentally enough.
Cinematics in those games is really, I can't believe they ruined it.
With
Sir Anakin, I'm tired. I mean, that's just crap. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, these moments that I remember seeing in the trailer because I did watch it over and over again.
Yeah, I think everybody did.
And I just remember getting a buzz any time I heard or recognized a moment from the trailer. Mm-hmm. Just because
I know I was excited any time I would, you know, I went to a movie like, God, I hope they have a Star Wars trailer to the on this.
But I'm just saying, like, you know. The entire, you know, the heroic moment of, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn telling them to take off and, like, you know, will I ever see you again? What does your heart tell you? I mean, I remember seeing that in the trailers and thinking, damn, this movie's going to be good. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, in the introduction to, you know, Anakin Skywalker meet, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, remember seeing that in the trailer, I was like, damn, this movie's going to be cool. You know? So... those are my thoughts on that. I don't know how much sense that makes to anyone else, but
that's one of the best introductions in the movie.
No!
Because it's so short, you know.
And that is the one line I despise.
You're a Jedi too? Please.
Good job,
God, man. No!
I still don't think that's the worst introduction. But wow, that's your worst line.
That's my worst line. I just cringe every time I hear that line. It's like, ooh.
Now, this is when the cutbacks to the villains starts to get a little bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's true.
You know, it's not as obvious what's happening on Naboo, you know, as you'd like it to be. It's not as... The gravity of the situation isn't as, you know, well established as you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention what Padme's supposed to be feeling at this point.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening to her people. I mean, that's something you want to feel.
Yeah.
But you don't.
Right.
You really do, because, I mean, you know, first of all, you know, I don't know. I feel like Padme's she's meant to be a tragic, romantic, tragic kind of character.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I want to feel that.
And I can't remember if we talked about this on episode 2, but it's the idea of Padme and Anakin getting together. It's kind of hard to figure in this movie because of the fact that she's more of a mother figure to him.
Well.
Than she is.
I feel that this is more of a friendship than it is a.
I don't really.
Yeah, me, I don't feel that
I don't really feel that.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know how you are with
I,
girls. So
I
cool.
I feel about the fact that I feel that.
that.
ahead, she's bro. Legal now.
Ahead,
okay.
Bro.
Okay. You know what?
Okay.
I mean, I really feel like she has more... I get the idea from her...
Right.
That she feels more of a...
Maternal
relationship feeling towards Anakin than...
Mm-hmm.
One
or
that
I would say sisterly. I would
right.
say...
But you know, I mean...
Still, the older sister looking after the younger brother. I mean,
right.
you know... It's
but,
still that
but
familial
you know, I mean,
idea...
But
that,
it's like, you know,
where it's
like
it's kind of hard to believe that eventually she would honestly
genuinely fall in love with this.
Yeah,
but it's like an age thing again. I mean, you know, when someone's like 10 and 15, it's weird, but someone's 20 and 25, you know.
Yeah,
thank you. That's, well, good
yeah, no,
point.
No, Hans, I'm not defending anything that you think about young girls.
What?
I'm not defending anything you think. But yes, there you go.
Yeah.
You might have to take that, strike that one from the back.
Yeah.
Here we have our first real look at Ian McDiarmid?
Ian McDiarmid, I think.
Okay.
McDiarmid, I think.
And Terrence Stamp,
who
was in Superman.
Wow, you
Yeah,
he was one of the
He was also in the Steven Soderbergh film The Limey this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like all he's in the three lines Crimson in this Council. Movie. Oh, that's right. I remember that.
I could Superman performance look good.
Well, he's given like nothing to do in this movie.
Right. Well, I mean, this so, is just his little delivery right there. Is,
yeah.
Wasn't, right. Of course, but again, mm-hmm. he's Star Wars.
Some added footage right
Yeah, there's yeah. some new footage here. Coruscant sort of reminiscent of Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm. Much more in episode
the
two.
The Ridley Scott film. And as well as the Fifth Element. I mean, you know, you can tell that's there too.
And why is this the best sequence in the entire movie?
Because
you never hear from these two again until after they leave. So this is my favorite sequence in the entire movie. Yeah, I remember Brian saying, you know, one of the first discussions Brian and I ever had about this movie was that, and I was complaining about something, probably one of the many thousands of things I felt was wrong with this movie. And one of the defenses you brought up was that, you know, this isn't meant to be an action movie as much as it is a political thriller.
I think we were talking about episode two, but...
Were we?
No, I mean, it does hold true with this one as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole idea, this does strike me as more of a political thriller than... Whereas the originals are...
War movies.
I wouldn't go as far as to say war movies, like
Space Cowboys, I think.
Yeah,
that's
the best description. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, whereas these are more about the intrigue, what leads, you know, what events lead to this.
Right.
But I'm digging this. Where we go in episode four.
I'm feeling every moment of this, you know, the political intrigue. I love this.
Yeah, I mean. You know, when the dialogue's decent enough and the character delivery's good, like right now,
yeah,
then it really does work.
Yeah,
you know, it really does work. And luckily, most of the time, the political stuff does involve good dialogue and good character mm-hmm. delivery.
Mm-hmm. First look at the Jedi Council,
which works. I mean, exact same. I mean, this is. I mean,
the scene would work even if Sam Jackson had half the lines he had in this movie.
It would,
Would be like one, but still,
be like half
that <one. laughs> exactly. But I mean, he got a kick out saying that.
Yeah.
And Frank Oz, of course, is Yoda. Mm-hmm. Still the puppet. Still the puppet in this one, not the CG character.
I really do miss the puppet now, though.
I think they did a pretty good job with the CG character. I mean, I miss the puppet too.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah. I think they did a pretty good job with the CG.
They did, and the CG character in Attack of the Clones is modeled more after Yoda and Empire Strikes Back. So,
yeah,
which makes it that much more special. But. Still, this is extremely special for me to just get to see Yoda as a puppet. Still, I mean, that's just I get a kick out of any moment with Yoda as a puppet. I mean, I just
any moment with Yoda in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember Sam Jackson getting an enormous buzz off of getting to act with Yoda.
Yeah.
You watch him on any of the extras on the DVD, and he's like a little kid in a candy store. So.
Well, I mean, it's like we sort of touched on it. How I mean, I think all of the actors really, the idea that they could be part of the Star Wars series
legacy, yeah.
You know, Liam Neeson. I remember reading stories about how he would watch it growing up in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Really liking it. Ewan McGregor, whose uncle I believe,
played Wedge,
played
and
Wedge in the original.
Good point. Yeah.
And it was so funny hearing Natalie Portman's story, how she had never seen the movies before.
Mm-hmm.
Before signing on to them. This is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Here.
Right.
I just love the idea of this.
This is spectacular.
Ugh.
Spectacular.
Gosh, I mean.
You know, but, and again, you know, as much as you want to feel the, what the quote-unquote tragedy is, it's not as apparent as you would like it to be.
Yeah.
You know, you're still getting over the, you know, as static as it is, you're still getting over what just happened on Tatooine, I think. You know, you're still getting over that part of the story. And I think,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, huh? Oh, yeah, there is something going on Naboo, isn't there?
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole political thing is a little bit difficult to follow the first time around.
Yeah,
it just really just period, is. You know,
as compelling as it is.
Right. I mean, this is cool, but you know, how many people in the theater really quite didn't know what was going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
at
this point,
get to the action, yeah. Crying out loud, man.
But
which, I mean, was one of the criticisms of this,
yeah,
of this movie, I think. Mm-hmm. Went, you know.
But we're seeing great visuals happening right now.
We, yeah, are. God, yes.
I mean, just and great ideas. I mean, great designs, great visuals, great ideas.
Just great period. Imagery.
Period. It's done.
And we really start to see Palpatine, who obviously becomes the Emperor, sort of start to manipulate. You sort of start to see his manipulation of the situation, which
right.
furthers...
And I think I think that moment right there,
episode two,
was one of the best manipulation moments.
I do too,
because I mean that was
I really do too.
With him speaking in her ear like that, and the conference that went.
Well,
on.
You see her expression too,
right, exactly.
Which
yeah, I mean that was just, and it's a powerful moment, and you know,
and the thing is, it's like
work.
You know, you don't necessarily
Chewbacca are not Wookiees. You also get to see some
E.T. And there was a rumor that Bender's here from Futurama.
Are you serious?
There's a rumor. But I'm pretty sure it's...
There's a rumor that supposedly you can see Boba Fett in a crowd scene at the pod race. You ever hear that?
Have I?
I heard that somewhere.
I think it's something I must have heard, but...
This is a spectacular image right
yeah.
now. The sunset... This entire sunset, you know, this entire moment.
Well, I mean, Star Wars sunsets. Anytime you have a Star Wars sunset is genius.
Yes, it is.
Especially going back to the original film, which that one's probably one of the defining moments in the original film.
And
just guess you.
I'll feel you.
Man, it's going time, yeah.
We're showing respect for Yoda by not saying anything right now, although we should be talking. I do remember getting chills at this moment for whatever reason it was.
I mean, you know,
whether it was, you know, the imagery or the fact that, you know, Yoda was talking or just the way of the situation.
Yeah, that Anakin line, what's that got to do with anything? I'm pretty sure that wasn't part of it.
Mm-hmm. But, no, well, you know what? I think I kind of like that because, you know, it was like this kid who had no
but
idea.
But did it need to be worded that way?
No, it didn't.
That's part of the problem
no,
with
it didn't.
A lot of this dialogue. It could have been worded better.
Yeah, it's all in the delivery.
Like, no, I mean, not necessarily delivery, just... What does that have to do with anything?
Mm-hmm.
If they'd said it that way, I probably could have bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, some of that's like, plenty of the time that the actors are making changes to, you know, the dialogue and the script.
Yeah.
And I don't think that happened much on this movie.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and that may just be because mm-hmm. the characters were in awe a little bit, you know, and they didn't want to, you know, affect things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is my favorite Jar Jar scene that we just passed.
Yeah. It is a good scene.
I mean, there's a real performance in there, I think.
There
I mean,
is.
I bought it. Yeah, you're shocked. Yeah, you're really that stunned. Let's see.
Who we will eventually see in episode 3, the Alan Tillies, who adopts Princess Leia.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. I'll be here all week. Yeah, I love this.
Yeah, this is...
Political intrigue. This is just...
I mean,
who would have expected this after everything we've been forced to sit through, first of all?
I don't think it's Ian McDermott's performance here who's making it happen.
Mm-hmm. As well as Natalie Portman.
Of course, yes. As well as Natalie Portman.